Rocket Ajax still approaching. Lifeform scanners identify Earthling Gordon at the controls. We guarantee its destruction when it reaches the lightning field.
Wait. We've got to deactivate the lightning field. Where are the atomic generators?
There's no time. They're 6 miles underground.
I'm heading for Sector Alpha 9. Hold the fort.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of The Subbeat, sponsored by DoorDash. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, The Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcast, search for Subbeacon, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? Happy Mother's Day.
Vic, where are you?
Okay, so I've been kicked out of my house. No, I've been kicked out. Finally, happy Mother's Day. I'm calling from the I'm broadcasting from the Motel 6. I'm broadcasting from the Americana Motel in Crystal City. I'm in the basement because she said she hated that I was using the bedroom for the recording instead of, so she can't be there.
A pleasure moon?
Yes, very. Ooh,
your bedroom should be a pleasure moon.
That's right. They all should be. And so I said, well, hold on. I said, I could move downstairs somewhere. And then I figured out the only place that would be suitable would be the basement, which, as you can see, JVL, is also the same basement where they filmed the Calvin Klein commercial.
You know, I was going to say that, actually. You have the wood paneling behind you.
This is, you know, I don't.
Is that where you bring local boys from the neighborhood down for just some photo shoots? Just to help with their headshots.
That's where you get the blue eyes.
Can you rip that shirt off?
I think, you know, it really is. And I think the wood paneling, this house.
Was it original, or did you put
it in
yourself?
No. This was, we moved in here in 2006. The house was from 1939, 1940. So I imagine that the paneling was probably sometime in the 60s that it was put. It's fine. It does the job. The weirdest thing about the setup is, so behind me is shockingly something that Kate did not want in the other parts of this house, which is the boulevard, I'm tilting my head, of broken dreams. You remember it was like Nighthawks from Ed Hopper, and that is from my sophomore year of college, and it had a neon light. You could see above, it's a neon pink light. But that no longer works, of course. And that really, let me tell you something, the chicks love that. And so...
and a neon light or a black light?
One and then the other. Oh, so this was... the funniest thing was when we did they have an open house of this house when we were looking at it. I go downstairs to this very basement, and in this very position, they actually had Edward Hopper's Nighthawks, like a reproduction. So it's really weird that it was kismet that I would replace it with the cheesiest thing possible. Anyway, so that was
great.
It.
And you want to get all the recent Republican presidents playing poker. That's another great one, right? Trump and W.
I have to steal that from the Beacon office. That's framed on the wall.
And Sonny, you're outdoors,
yes,
right?
Yes, okay. Sonny, yeah. You are in the basement. You are in the backyard.
Outdoors. I'm outdoors because it's lovely out, and I don't spend enough time outside. So
that shocks me.
Yeah.
Do you get
We actually spent a lot of time outside today, but I wanted to spend a little more. So.
Have you seen any rattlesnakes, scorpions, or armadillos in your backyard?
No, but we do have a lot of lizards. We've got like a lot of little, you know,
so cool.
Five-inch lizards.
Where?
In Woodbridge. We have lizards.
Really?
Little blue-tailed lizards everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, adorable. We have, yeah, I like those. Lizards That's are just kind of cool. It's weird. I don't know anybody who doesn't like lizards. I'm sure there are people out there who like really
Everybody
hate them and think
them.
They're gross. But like, you see them in your house or see them like on the outside of the house, you know, like on the walls or whatever. You're just like, oh, a lizard. That's cool.
Sign of good luck.
At least I am. I don't know.
Sign of good luck. And you never see them like, you know, when I was a kid, we'd go to the Philippines and they were all over the state, just hang out in the house, a ton of them, like on the ceiling. And they're just waiting there by the lights, ready to, you know, any mosquito or fly that comes by. They're just, but you never notice.
I feel like in the house would be a little different.
They were house lizards, but they never moved. They were just like on the ceilings waiting for flies to come in. But you never notice. It's not like they ever pooped on you. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. How are you guys? Sonny, how is life otherwise, other than being outside?
I'm at the end. of all of my ropes. I just can't
What's wrong,
keep
Sonny?
Doing. Oh, just this. Just I Everything. Like. I cannot continue doing like four different jobs at work in addition to like, you know, 12 hours of daycare every day. I need one thing, and that's the, you know, daycare situation to be resolved. What if that was taken care of? I don't need to go to a restaurant. I don't need to go to a mall. I went to Barnes & Noble this weekend to pick up Flash Gordon.
Oh, you bought it. I was wondering how you got it so quickly.
I bought it on Blu-ray, and I went to
You didn't
want to
stream it?
I didn't want to stream. Well, it's weird because the cheapest streaming option was like $8 or $9, and it was only like $2 more to just buy the Blu-ray. So I was like, it has a great Alex Ross cover. I'm going to go buy
That's a good cover.
I'm going to go buy the Blu-ray. But it was very weird, like the Barnes & Noble, right? Like you order it online and you go to pick it up, but when you get there, there's a little sign that's like, call the store and we'll bring it out to you, and we'll either put it in your trunk or we'll leave it on this table, and then you will come in. And it's just like,
so you can't walk in and browse.
You
the
cannot.
Mask.
You literally cannot walk into the store, and like they lock the door behind themselves mm-hmm. every time they go back in. It was very funny, but like, you know, other places are open. Like I drove past the Half Price Books, the used bookstore, to get to the Barnes & Noble. Totally, it's just open. It's just open, and it's like, you know, limited
Anybody
occupancy,
there?
Whatever. Yeah. Parking lot was probably, you know, a third full.
Yeah.
People. I would say that there were more people on the street this weekend, and there were more people in parking lots of all the various stores than there have been for a long time. People were definitely out and about this weekend in Dallas, Texas.
They're getting antsy. They're coming out.
It's they're basically done with this. Now that said, when I went out, everybody had masks on. I would say it was like a 95% masked situation at the grocery store.
Be very careful. You're inching closer to politics.
No. I mean, it is what it is. Yeah. It's people out wearing masks and doing their thing.
I have noticed something, which I'm actually going to write about tomorrow, which is that you would think that the Venn diagram of people who say we got to open everything up right now. Mm-hmm. And the Venn diagram of people who say we all got to be wearing masks would be a circle. But it's not.
No, it's definitely not.
It's not.
It's definitely.
There's a whole bunch of people who are like, open everything up right now, who are also like, I ain't wearing your slave mask.
I hate wearing the mask.
Freedom.
I went to the supermarket the other day. I was the only person in the supermarket without a mask. I said, you people are crazy. And it was great because everywhere I went, people went away from me. It was like every aisle was like the Red Sea, the parting of the sea in the Cecil B. DeMille Ten Commandments.
You were walking the wrong way down the aisles. You're like, where's my toaster oven? Right. Where's my toaster oven?
I need it. Completely wrong. I'm taking my time. I'm browsing. I said, look, if I'm going
to
get closer than 6 feet,
open up
if I'm getting closer than 6 feet from you, I'll put the mask on. But why am I going to be 100 feet away? Oh, better put the mask on. In my car, put the mask on. Good night. Put the mask on. I'm in the bathroom. I gotta go to use the bathroom. Put my mask on. Well, I use that anyway. But
when you get to the checkout line, if there's a long line, you just make sure the mask is on. You just start coughing.
You know what?
And they'll all just let you go.
You
just start coughing, and they'll tell you. You just go right ahead.
I'll tell you where there's no line. I can't believe I'm giving away this secret, but it's in the self checkout because a lot of people don't know how to use that. And so
it's the opposite out by us.
Really?
The biggest lines are the self-checkouts because people don't want to be touching things that other people do.
Okay. Well, there you go. Other than that, Sonny, you look fine. You look like Jim Morrison when he was in Paris.
Yeah. No, I had said that I wasn't going to trim my beard at all until this thing is over. And it's like it's getting uncomfortable. I don't like it.
If you wait for this to be over, you're going to be like ZZ Top.
It's making me, I think it's actually impacting my like psychological well-being. I think it's actually making me like a little bit crazy. So I may trim
the beard
tomorrow.
It's the beard doing that.
I think it's all connected, man. Mm-hmm. I think I'm slowly going insane from having to be around my children and from this beard. And also, again, having to do like five jobs at work. So, like, there's
I'm
just
sorry
like
to hear that.
It's just like I think I might go into the woods and just never come back. I'll keep the beard and I'll go live in the woods.
So can I riff JVL. Off of the ZZ? Can I riff off the ZZ Top thing?
Yes,
because it's interesting please. You threw that out. I've mentioned this before. Playing a lot of Guitar Hero.
Oh right, okay,
in this
sure,
house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot great. Of Guitar yeah. Hero, and the two songs that on Legends of Rock that Flash and Favorite, who rock mm-hmm. out in co-op mode, they have a band. She plays bass. He plays lead. And
bass is very important.
Two favorite songs: Welcome to the Jungle, obviously. And second, the ZZ Top classic, LaGrange.
Hmm.
Now, you may not know LaGrange, but you would know it if you heard it. It's one of the most iconic rock songs ever. It's do 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 do.
Oh, yeah. Sure, of course.
Right? And because it's ZZ Top, the lyrics are utterly indecipherable, right? They're singing at what is essentially a... Only dogs can hear it, right? It's such a low frequency, and all you hear is wow, 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 wow.
Now, when you play, they don't play the lyrics. It's not like karaoke where there's lyrics appearing.
No, they're singing. Like, you know, people are singing the like you didn't hear. But anyways, the Flash and Favorite are just rocking out the other day as I'm walking through, and just out of curiosity, I was like, huh, I wonder what this song is about. So I pulled it up. Would you care to guess what the song LaGrange, classic song included mm-hmm. on this thing is about?
What?
It is about going to a whorehouse where the girls are only $10 each and they're real pretty.
Wow.
Well, that's
what
I mean,
it's
that's
about.
A good deal.
That's great.
I mean, it's teaching the children, you know, to be thrifty.
You should have had them play one of the more wholesome ZZ Top songs like Velcro Fly.
But what struck me is this is, again, one of those songs which becomes totally divorced from the meaning, right? And same, like, you know, because the lyrics are indecipherable. And yeah. It's great.
That's
it's
very
great.
Funny. That's
so
very funny.
The kids obviously have no idea.
No, again, it's like me with push in the bush. You know,
yeah, no, it's just like
just pushing. Just you're like pushing that. On. You're pushing on a bush.
Do you know what I did not let my kids do?
What?
Watch Flash Gordon.
Oh.
With me.
Again,
PG.
I was 7. I was 7 when we all went to the theater.
This movie is a PG movie.
This is better than Star Wars.
Can we just get right into it, or do we have other things we want to pretend to talk about? Because
is there anything is there anything else going on, JVL, you wanted to chat about?
I'm going to save that for the stinger.
Nope. Okay, good. Yeah, sure, what time? Oh, it's only 12.
We've been doing this
41.
For 7 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's get to Flash in a second here. I just wanted to say I am doing fine. And for Mother's Day, the first thing I did was I told the kids, Mother's Day, direct all questions to me. Do you know how hard that is? Everybody wants to ask mom. Nobody really wants to ask Dad, at least in my house. You know, it's mom for everything. So I said, today, direct all your questions to me. That worked half the time, I would say. And then the other thing I did was I made breakfast, and I have mastered the omelet. I might put up a picture of that. I did it French style where you fold it over several times. So it's not just a half moon. It's not, you know, it's not a half moon omelet, but you fold it over so it's...
It's a rectangle?
Yeah.
So like
that's
two folds?
That's right. That's right. So yeah. You fold it over like a crepe, basically like a crepe. And I actually...
Were you wearing a French maid's uniform while you were doing
right.
that?
That's right. And I got splattered.
You got splattered on Mother's Day.
Yeah, I got splattered from the sausage. I gave her a little breakfast sausage in the morning. Sorry, that didn't sound right. People are gonna think that you know, like, what is he talking about? But no, I actually did give her a Mother's Day gift.
A
I actually,
banger in the mouth, as
I,
you
no,
Yanks
no,
say.
I gave her a dark chocolate bar. Also doesn't sound right. I don't know why that doesn't sound right. And then it was a Godiva. I'm talking about a Godiva bar. And then we had Thai for dinner, which I don't know what that means either. But you know, anyway. What am I trying to say? What a lucky woman. You know what? And look at this, with 14 and a half minutes into the recording, it's perfect, because what I'm trying to say is continue supporting restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the United States, Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep communities we operate in safe. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order or $15 or more and zero delivery fees for their first month when you download the DoorDash app and enter code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off your first order and zero delivery fees for a month when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code SUBBEACON. Don't forget, that's code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. They will bring you your food in a flash. Speaking of which, you guys finally saw Flash Gordon. I was really quite surprised last week when sort of offhandedly you just said, oh, that I was the only one. Usually it's 99% of the time it's the other way around where you guys have watched a movie that I have not watched. And you know, Justice League, stuff like that.
Chinatown, Casablanca.
Chinatown. Jaws, Star
Citizen
Wars,
Kane,
okay,
Vertigo.
Titanic. No, this time was
North by Northwest.
So Flash Gordon, and so you guys saw, and you know what? It was funny because as soon as we sort of teased that, and people really got excited on Twitter, and then
they
told us yes, and then they told us about the new. Well, Sonny, you discovered, or somebody else had discovered that. The guy who did the cover, you just mentioned him, is
Alex Ross, one of the great.
No idea who she is. Okay. Anyway, and is redoing the cover? Is that what's going on there? One is redoing the cover?
I don't know.
The
cover of the Blu-ray was painted by Alex Ross.
That's right. And then that they're re-releasing Flash Gordon this summer in 4K.
Yeah, there's going to be a 4K release.
I don't even know what 4K is, but I'm excited.
It's two more K.
Two more Ks. So that's exciting. And so it just happened to be perfect that they made that announcement. We mentioned it on the show, and here we are. So JVL, you streamed it.
I did.
And Sonny, you rented it. Okay, go
I
ahead.
Could ever hope for
I
and
bought
more.
It.
Go. You're on.
But, no, I bought it too. Vic, could you give us a big boy review?
I can't. You're catching me on the spot. I didn't write anything down. You know, I usually rely on.
But you have seen this movie, what, 40 times? 400 times?
It's closer to 400. Closer to 400, I think. We watch TV a lot.
Because when I texted you last night and you were four sheets to the wind, you were just spouting lines back to me. So
right,
it's not like you have
right.
to prepare
open
for
open fire on Ajax on Rocket Ajax, open fire, she says. Kala says, who she was like the female SS commandant. It was very terrifying. Yes, terrifying. But she's, in fact, a very pretty actress. She died already, but she was very pretty. Most of these, they're all like Italians, you know, because it's... Okay, so...
Dino.
That's right, Dino De Laurentiis, who I... Would that be the grandfather of Giada? Must be. Must be the grandfather.
Probably.
Not father.
Probably.
It's got to be grandfather.
So which one of you is going to do a big boy review of Flash Gordon?
Well, Sonny, you just saw it. Did you want to give a big boy? I mean, I can give you the rough...
The rough stuff.
Flash Gordon. It's a movie, all right. It's got a soundtrack by
Queen. I'm taking a
picture
because people like the pictures.
I don't know how to review this movie because it's a movie that is... that is intentionally bad. It's purposeful camp. But the problem with purposeful camp is that purposeful camp is a contradiction in terms. You cannot intentionally make camp and have it still be camp. It's just bad. And maybe it's like an homage to badness, and that's fine. But what it isn't is camp. I mean, like, again, we could go into a whole thing about Susan Sontag and On Camp and all that, but like the simple fact of the matter is that camp only really works if you're earnest and if you're like pouring your heart and your soul into something and you're trying to make something really good and it turns out to be terrible. This
what happens
the plan.
if
Plan 9 from outer space, right?
And but what happens if one-third of the people associated with the production are earnest and two-thirds aren't? Because that's what seems to have happened here.
Yes, well, absolutely. They mean
where
they,
the producer, really, Dino De Laurentiis, is totally... The lead actor is totally earnest,
but
and then all these other people around him, including the director, are shooting it as if it's camp.
You have a situation where you have a bunch of people who are just natural pros and who are very good, you know, like Timothy Dalton and Max von Sydow and what's his
Brian Blessed,
what?
Boss Nass, Brian Blessed, and like they are just so naturally good at acting that when they come into contact with somebody like the lead, mm-hmm. the guy who plays Flash Gordon, that it like it skews everything, it just throws everything off. But they like. I would not say that they are they were not intentionally making camp necessarily. They were just being pros.
But the director seems to have had
the director and the producers clearly like had an idea of like we're doing this ridiculous thing. And it I don't know.
According to the documentary that I watched immediately after
Dino
really thought he was making a space epic. Mm-hmm.
A space epic. But space epic more closer to Argo than Star Wars, right? I mean, if Argo became a movie, it could have been like Flash Gordon, basically, you know?
Yeah. So I
did you not like it, Sonny?
No, I didn't really like it very much. It's bad. I realize that like that's part of the joy of the thing, but I couldn't get past the, you know, essential badness of it. Sorry.
So the weirdness that was bursting through the seams of the badness did not catch your eye and make it so that you could not turn away from it?
No.
Because it's a crazy, weird-ass movie.
It's very weird,
and it's very, it's very psychosexual. But, I mean, honestly, it did nothing for me. It just really did nothing for me. I was like,
boo.
I wouldn't say I was bored exactly, but that's only because I was drinking pretty heavily.
It's taken a dark turn. The review has taken a dark turn.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that extended sequence where he's like playing football, and that
I
and
love
it's
that. Oh my!
Like I know,
gosh.
I know, there are people who like that as their like favorite scene in
movies.
It's terrible. It's just terrible.
There's no
redeeming. It's not funny though.
He's a quarterback.
I laughed.
So,
Can you give us a 30-second summary of the movie?
Yeah, just for anybody who has not seen it. Flash Gordon is a quarterback for the New York Jets, right? The movie was made in 1980, and he was getting on one of those, charter flight along with Dale Arden. And at that very moment, Earth is being targeted by Ming the Merciless living on the planet Mongo, and he's asking, like, what toy, you know, do you have for me to play with today? And in other words, what he says later, what Max von Sydow or what Ming says later is, you know, they find little planets all over the universe, and they start hurling stuff at it, and if there's basically no reaction, they move on. But if there is a reaction, then that gets his interest, and then he really wants to start playing around to bring about you know, pain and suffering, because it excites him. You know, I don't think he has any plan. He doesn't plan on moving.
Would you say it excites him, Victorino?
In an
intellectual and philosophical sense?
It's Max von Sydow. So, you know, I mean, he does such a good job.
Spell it out, Victorino. It's a sexual sense.
It's a very...
It excites him in a sexual sense.
In every sense. And then Flash and Dale. So they got hot hail, and they've got earthquakes and floods, everything that's happening to Earth, and it's because of this.
Ming the Merciless has a machine with buttons say earthquake or hot hail, and he just pushes them and then
you get it, right? This is wild. Okay, so they crash, and of course, luckily, they crash near where Dr. Hans Sarkoff is, and he was a crank scientist from NASA. Nobody believed him about this other intelligent life form that so he basically had discovered planet Mongo, and nobody believed him, but it turned out to be right. So they get on a rocket ship and they end up at planet Mongo. So he had a program to go over there, and they meet, you know, Ming's minions, and immediately they realize that Ming's minions are hostile. So they take them in, and then Flash Gordon realizes that, you know, why are you doing this to us? And it's because he just wants to, you know, Earth is his plaything for Ming and he's going to destroy it. And so Flash has to save the day. And with Dale and Dr. Zarkov. And what happens is how he does this is not single-handedly in and of itself, but rather by rallying all these members of Ming's empire to turn on Ming, because they basically serve under him. They work for him in fear. So you have the Birdmen, right? Voltan. And then you have
Hawkmen.
The Hawkmen. And you have the... Timothy Dalton's men, the Forest Men, Arborea.
Men.
Arborea? Yes, Arborea. So he has them, you know, it takes time for them to get the courage to defy.
Okay, I'm sorry, Vic, I have to step in. And you're skipping the rebellion. Most you're skipping the most important part.
Which is Ornella Muti, the princess.
Princess Aura.
All right. Please. Well, and you know who else is instrumental in overthrowing Ming is his own daughter, Princess Aura, played by the great Italian actress Ornella Muti. And I think, you know, part of it, of course, is how she looks, how she dresses, and also that amazing accent. You get, you know, bonus points for the accent, and she's lovely. And there's even a great scene of her fighting with Dale, having a little pillow fight in the bedroom. I mean, this movie's got everything. And of course they've got the tilting arena with the spikes, and they've got whips, and it's supposed to be Flash Gordon versus Prince Baron. And Clytus, I love Clytus, was my favorite. And I mean, this had everything. And it was fun.
This
was
movie has
funny.
Everything.
This movie is fun, funny. Again, as JVL said, I'm quoting lines. I can quote lines left and right from that movie. So, yes, it's campy. I mean, the dialogue, I mean, it's not Steve Zalian, okay? I understand that. But there are some funny lines, you know, some intentional, some not, obviously. And then the documentary was great because Brian Blessed plays Voltan, who's head of who leads the Hawkmen. And there's a famous scene where... Dale gets, he walks behind her and she's supposed to react to getting, you know, goosed, you know, where he pinches her in the ass. And of course, Brian Blessed says that he actually did it just to get a real reaction. He reached right in there, even though he wasn't supposed to do that. But if you listen to
Brian, a different time.
It was a different time. And if you know, that in the documentary,
because today that would cost him his career.
Yeah, that would cost him his career. And, you know, you watch Beyond Flash, the documentary, and he talks about it, and you can tell he's not, you know, unapologetic. He's like, yeah, I wanted to get a real reaction from it. So I grabbed her from behind, you know, and that's how it is. So we have him do, you know, he's the reason for that. So again, it's we have a lot of people love this movie. But, you know, I mean, for me, a lot of it is obviously nostalgia too. You know, because it reminds me, I was a kid. I was seven. It was in the movie theater. So we saw it in the theater, and I thought it was wild. And then we got it on VHS. And it just, yeah, that was it. And there were certain scenes that are just the mind-erasing scene. It was that was just, you know, for Dr. Zarkov, Kala is going to empty his minds like we are emptying your pockets, and you go backwards, but not really backwards, kind of backwards forwards. It's weird.
Not actually backwards.
No, but it worked. It totally worked. And you can see, so it goes back to his time in NASA, and of course, World War II, and craziness. So I, that's
Sonny,
me.
Are you being bombed?
It's like I'm reliving the World War II scenes from his memory.
Any last words, Sonny? Bomb hits.
I was a little bit confused by the mind erasing scene because they're like, all right, now put him back to level 3. And then the Nazi chick is like, Kala. No, do it to level 6.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the difference between level 3 and level 6 are.
Level 6 is supposed to melt his mind, but Dr. Zarkov a human being, so they totally, you know,
they misunderestimate
the humans. And of course, he is a brilliant mind, and he was able to, as you know, as he says, by even memorizing songs from the Beatles, he says.
And the Talmud. He kept quoting the Talmud to himself.
He was thinking if only he were a rich man. That's what he was saying. As you know, because that was Topol from Fiddler on the Roof. That was that. But there are certain scenes that I think were horrifying or terrifying, I should say, when he has to put his hand.
The initiation
in Arborea. See, I'm jumping all over the place because this is not my thing, as you can tell. Reviewing movies is not my thing. But there's an initiation scene, and he in Arborea among the Arbor Men, as JVL says. And a young guy has to put his hand in this, like, a giant tree stump with holes in it.
10 different holes. And the idea is you put your hand into it, and there's a creature in there, and if it goes into one hole, maybe the creature kills you, and another hole you survive and then are initiated.
And they are terrifying. Yeah, so they're like, well, if it was meant to be, it was meant to be. And the one guy does not get it. Now, here's an interesting thing. So the one guy who gets stung by the creature living in, it's like the creature with, like, covered in leaves, and then it only gets worse. They said that the pain only gets worse and worse, and then you lose your mind. And so he begs Timothy Dalton to kill him. I don't know if you saw this. I did. At the very, very end of the documentary, that actor says he ran into Timothy Dalton and said, "Oh, by the way, you killed me in Flash Gordon." And he said he gave them, like, the meanest look, like, "Don't remind me." And so, I mean, one of the things in the documentary is you notice Timothy Dalton does not appear anywhere in that doc. He is not, you know, he did not take the request for interview. So, I mean, I think we could tell how he feels about that. Now, JVL, that was me watching it from 7 to, you know, now, 40 years later. But for you, JVL, this was a first time, so it's a different perspective. And yet.
So it's a disaster. But it is an incredibly weird and interesting disaster. And, you know, I think I texted you, it's like Wizard of Oz meets Plan 9 from Outer Space meets Basic Instinct. You know, like there's so much psychosexual weirdness happening in it.
Yeah.
And maybe I wouldn't have loved it so much if I didn't love you. But I feel like you finally got me. I finally get you.
After 20 years. Rosetta Stone.
Now you know
how
this mind works, unfortunately.
I understand everything now.
It all makes sense.
It really does. You know, so here's the thing. I mean, like a lot of bad movies, they're crap. But there's a bunch of really interesting filmmaking going on here, particularly with regards to set design and costuming. And they must have spent a bazillion dollars on the sets and the costumes. That's why the sets and costumes are really why I think Wizard of Oz, because they're elaborate. Mm-hmm. And the reason a 4K restoration of this would be good is because you would like to see more detail of all the work they did on set. Right. All I could think of actually was in the first Thor movie. All of the interiors of Asgard, like Throne Room, which was all CGI. Mm. In Flash Gordon, it's that sort of aesthetic, but done practically.
It's built, yeah.
Practical.
And I have to jump in here because every time I looked at the screen, I saw, like, sometimes the actual literal seams in the costuming. Like, the costumes all look like crap. They look like they were iron-on, like, gold stripes and stuff. I mean, it just looked terrible. Those lizard people? What even was going on there?
Their faces are in the mouth, they have eyes.
The movie.
It was wild.
It's not even that the costuming is bad, though it is. It is that it looks cheap. I mean, it just looks cheap and chintzy. And, like, really? I don't know what you're talking about with this, like...
Timothy Dalton's armor shirt, all of the Hawkman stuff.
All the Hawkman stuff looks, I mean...
in Mongo, the all the stuff.
It's
that
also
the
imagining of what's. It's like a sci-fi imagining from the 1930s. So there's a lot of that going on.
Oh yeah,
so the rocket.
You're in a scientifically advanced place where light is often gained from torches.
Yes, yes,
right.
That's
I mean,
right.
They,
that's right.
They have cosmic rays, and yet they have torches to provide light in the dungeon.
That's right.
I mean,
No,
I thought that, like, the sequining, I mean, it looked like it was handmade by a bunch of old Italian ladies.
Right. Because I think it literally cost a gazillion lira, probably. A gazillion.
Yeah, maybe more. And there's stuff that's so crazy in it. Like, you know, Dale is being forcibly married to Ming at the end. And they've gone to all these pains to, like, draw an alternate world and say... But in this alternate world on Mongo, when there's a marriage ceremony, they play the wedding march. Here comes the bride.
Is it Mendelssohn or is it Wagner? It's Wagner, I think. You know, he's that influence. His stuff goes out there.
It's you know, the Hawkmen are all leather daddies. I mean, there's a huge, like,
biker, among the Hawkmen, leather daddy thing
going on. But there are no Hawk women. I don't believe.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We're all Hawk men. But it's all about Princess Aura. Everything, the whole movie is about Princess Aura.
Yeah, well,
I think, right? And Vic is about Princess Aura.
Everything I ever needed to know about you, I now know by
having watched Princess Aura. Because
the way she moves, the way she talks.
The weird, I mean, clearly she has banged her father.
Oh.
100% when she's asking him to have Flash, and she's basically saying, you know, I'll let you put it anywhere if you let me have Flash.
That's terrible. Not the boar worms. Not the boar worms. Where are they boring?
There's a scene where she's being whipped with a cat of nine, whipped with a cat o' nine tails. When she and Flash show up in Arboria for the initiation ceremony, first, you just hear the initiation ceremony. It's basically a bunch of guys in a drumming circle who are jerking off together. That's exactly what it sounds like. Oogie on my cookie. And she stops, and she gets this breathless ecstasy about her. She goes, oh, I love the initiation ceremonies, because she just, like, gets off on death. Everything about it is insane. Talks about her pleasure moon.
Yes,
right?
That's right, because that's how she managed to save Flash, was with the doctor. Right.
She's banging the doctor in addition to Prince Baron. In addition to, I mean, she would bang the Hawkman if Foltan was interested, but he's not. You know, he goes the other way.
You don't know that.
100%, we know that. I think. You know, and then you could. This is the thing. So I was planning to watch only the documentary or Flash.
I remember whichever was shorter.
Uh-huh. And I wound up, even though Flash is a little bit longer, I watched Flash instead. And I was so taken by it, I immediately watched the documentary afterwards.
I'm so glad you watched the movie.
Where's the documentary? It's on Amazon.
It's called Beyond Flash. It's really about Sam Jones and what happened.
It is mostly about Sam Jones, who's actually the least interesting person in all this, I think. I mean, he's an interesting life.
His real life arc is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But so Peter Winnegard, who plays Clytus, you're going to love this.
Who plays Skeletor? Because that's...
Yeah, basically he's Skeletor.
He's like the live-action He-Man Skeletor reminded me of.
Yes. So on the day when they shoot his death scene, he shows up on the set and basically tries to argue the director out of killing him.
Right, please.
And it's all because he thinks there's going to be a sequel, and he wants to get the job in the sequel.
He says, at the end of the documentary, he says the hand that picks up the ring is his. How does he explain how he survived being impaled and the eyeballs? Again, a vivid scene in that movie is where Flash Gordon impales him. And it's so shocking because it's eyeballs and tongue.
Yeah, it was pretty grotesque.
It was great.
This movie really pushes the PG.
Well, 1980, you know, you can get away with a lot back then.
The sexual stuff, when Princess Aura is basically giving Flash a hand job in the rocket ship after she secrets him away from Mongo. And she's basically going down on him while he's flying the ship. I thought to myself, this can't have been really PG.
Totally PG.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
No. Oh, it was. So, talking about breeding Dale, and I will breed. Ming is going to take his power potion before he breeds
Dale. Right. That's right. That's how he would do it. I had the Ming the Merciless action figure.
Of course you did.
And it was the tall one. You know, like in the olden days, they were tall.
The 12-inch figures, 10-inch figures. Yeah,
big. The Mego one.
And he had the black helmet. You could put the black helmet on him because he has the battle outfit. The battle outfit. Now, one of the great stories from that documentary also is Sam Jones saying, you know, he would be reading his lines, and there were certain scenes where, you know, Max von Sydow is, you know, he's out of the shot, but he still insisted on wearing the full heavy costume, which weighed, you know, a ton. And Sam Jones asked him about it later, and of course, Max von Sydow is like, well, it's getting to character. You know, it's what we do. You know, this is acting. And he's great in it. I mean, it would not have been a movie without Ornella Muti, obviously, but also Max von Sydow. You know?
So can we talk a little bit about Sam Jones? So yeah. Sam Jones, the weirdness of casting this guy who is a terrible actor as your lead in it.
He was
when you've cast all these other real actors in other parts. Strikes me as crazy.
Had they thought, like, oh, he's going to be the next big thing? I don't know. Because he was in 10 with Bo Derek, right? He played the husband. And he's the guy who falls asleep as the boat goes sailing. So he gets severely sunburned. And I think it's Dudley Moore who saves him. And then he was, a Playgirl centerfold. And then he does Flash Gordon. So that was his art. And then he walks off post-production.
Or is fired. No, but so here's my question for you, Vic, because you know more about this than I do. So in all the accounts, you never hear his voice in the movie,
or at least
which is,
some
again,
of it, I think.
Weird.
Yeah.
He is, all of his lines are dubbed. Those,
yeah.
He is fired.
So he was dubbed because
throughout the entire thing.
So the voice you hear, because it didn't seem quite right, but I knew he wasn't, like, he's not Arnold Schwarzenegger, or like he's not an Italian. There's no reason to dub him.
Or Lou Ferrigno.
Spite. The reason to dub him was spite. So what it sounds like what happened, but it's somewhat unclear from the documentary, is that his agents told him some way through production, you can get more money out of them.
Yeah.
Now, because you're in the middle of shooting this thing and
big
they can't lose you.
Movie,
it's a big movie.
Right.
So go to Dino and get more money. And Dino evidently, something happens. The crew is given a week off for Christmas break because they've been shooting in England. And Sam goes back to the U.S. for Christmas.
I think they were at Pinewood probably.
And never comes back. And it's unclear to me. Even the documentary only really dances around what happens here.
How he apologized to Dino many years later, and he said he blamed his representation, but doesn't even really get into it. But obviously, if you're butting heads with Dino De Laurentiis, I think you know who's going to win that. You know.
Yeah. But what was unclear to me is how far along they were, because it says that they came back to keep shooting. So they clearly shot some stuff without him.
Yeah.
But I couldn't understand what it was.
No, my understanding was that it was all post-production when he didn't come back, but maybe there were certain scenes that they did.
But how bananas is that? I mean, imagine it is. It's so
much
more bananas than replacing Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
In All the Money in the World with
Christopher Plummer.
With Christopher Plummer. It's so much more bananas than that. Because then you're like reshooting this is just the title character in our movie and the leading man. We're going to use another guy's voice throughout the entire movie because fuck him.
Yeah. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. But then
Sonny, doesn't that pique your interest? Like how did that, like
Yeah, no, well I mean
it's crazy.
I will say that it certain things about the badness of the film snap into place. When I understand that everything was redubbed by somebody who wasn't the actor, because again, like part of it is the line readings are all just wrong and bad, on his end, and like, yeah, well, I will be honest, this is bad producing, frankly. Like, I don't care. I don't care what he demanded, or you know, you figure some way around it, and then you screw him afterward. But like the it's a bad movie, so it doesn't shock me that something like this happened.
So, Victorina, can we talk like for 2 minutes
Melody
about the documentary?
Melody Anderson. You want to talk about Melody Anderson? Because she's great, too. And she didn't have much of a, you know, she did some work after, but not a lot. She did a TV special on the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. And that's just me remembering it now. I haven't looked it up, but I'm pretty sure she was in that. And she was in a horror movie with James Farantino called Dead and Buried. And that I saw at home when I was a kid. And that is awful. Where, with the great, what's his name? Albert. I forget his last name. And it's a mortuary guy. And he was creating basically zombies by killing people and populating the small town with dead people who had come back to life. But they Pet Cemetery-like. A very dark movie, which I believe is available online. Dead and Buried. Okay, go ahead, JVL.
No, I was going to ask you about from the documentary, the stuff about Sam. So you seem to have, Brian Blessed and Max von Sydow and Timothy Dalton, all of whom are real actors with real careers. Mm-hmm. And then, but they're all the supporting actors, basically.
Mm-hmm. And the main guy.
And your two leads are Melody Anderson. Melody Anderson and Sam Jones, who have almost no careers post this, right? And now all they do is like go to conventions, and like sign photos and
Comic-Con.
Stuff.
Comic-Con, it's busy.
Which
it's
is a full, I guess is a people sad.
People make that.
I mean,
into
the
a
shots
full-time.
Of him like setting up plastic tables
on his own
at Comic-Con.
He's doing it by himself.
Like, man, just hustling for like living off of having been Flash Gordon, even though you're, Anyway, it sounds like this guy had a very hard life.
He found God. That was key.
Dad died early. Brother killed himself when he was a teenager. And he sounds like he had a ton of drug problems in the late 70s and early 80s. Who would have thunk? The extent to which like drugs are the hidden explanation in almost all this stuff. Right? Like in Tiger King and this, right? The explanation of how a bad movie like this gets made
drugs.
Has to be right? What percentage of the people involved in this production do you think were taking drugs often throughout the inception production and post-production?
Remember all the stories about Robert Altman's Popeye?
No.
You know, the scene they were filming there in wherever they were filming on, somewhere in the Med, I think, weren't they? That on the island. And there were references. It's like it's basically one giant orgy. You know, I mean, it was, you know, and it's the movie with Robin Williams and Shelley Duvall.
Yeah,
you
know, I'm.
Yeah. It was such a mess. But, yeah, you know, that was Robin Williams at the heyday, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. The whole thing is so bananas that I loved it. And I see exactly why it is a cult classic.
Yes, thank you. And Sonny has said a total of 10 words.
I know. But this is what I'm saying. I agree with your Sonny. I agree with the idea that you can't make camp on purpose. But what happened here, I think, is that again, you had two factions within the production.
Yeah.
One of which was trying to make camp, and the other of which thought they were making Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, when your director thinks you're making camp, you're making camp.
Well, I mean, you know, like that, unless the producer is the guy who is like an industry himself, because you know Mike Hodges, his filmography after this is not huge. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got 26 credits total.
Yeah,
he said in the documentary, he said he was puzzled why Dino hired him to direct Flash Gordon. And he asked him about it once, you know, it got off the ground and he felt more comfortable that his job was safe. And he says, why me? And according to Mike Hodges, Dino just said, I like your face. And that was it.
One of the stories in the documentary is how they cast Topol. So for the Topol, he is the Dr. Max.
Zarkov.
What's it?
Dr. Zarkov.
So like, you know, the day before they've got to lock their cast in, Dino and Hodges are sitting talking about and they had two people who they liked equally. And Dino literally said, well, let's just flip a coin. I do this all the time. I make decisions this way all the time. I thought to myself, is this a Harvey Dent thing?
Yes.
where he's like, you know, oh, I make my own luck, or because that's exactly it's a double-sided right. coin, and he knew what he was doing, or is this guy such a fraud who just happened to like luck into his career that he actually is just making decisions by flipping a coin?
No.
I don't know. Anyway. It's crazy. I loved it.
I loved it,
I understand you.
I thought
I love
it was
you.
Wild. I mean, I understand. Yeah, likewise. It's and great. I hear, oh, cheers. Cheers.
Cheers to that
cheers.
Big guy.
There you go.
Right. You too, Sonny. Sure.
I was 7. I thought it was hilarious. I mean, also, it was in the theater. I was high as a kite, you know, but anyway.
Vic, here's a serious question. As a young adolescent, how many times, roughly, would you say you drifted off to sleep at night thinking about Princess Aura taking you to her pleasure moon? Because I don't know what a pleasure moon is, but it sounds amazing. And I bet 12-year-old Vic wanted to go to there.
I think basically it's like hedonism, the size of a moon. Hedonism like Jamaica?
But it's only her moon.
Only like, for two people.
I don't understand how it can be
you
a pleasure
moon. You get
moon
tired after
two
a while.
People.
But yeah, it could be just
here's the other
a
thing.
A lot of bodies.
Sonny, how old would you say the Princess Aura presents as in this movie?
I don't know, like 25?
Good answer, Sonny. Good answer.
I was going to say 17.
No. At
maybe 19.
At least 18.
No. Maybe 19. All the patterns are set
here. She was
here.
In her early 20s, I think, when she filmed that, Ornella.
25. She was 25. 12.
There you go.
I love
25. That is, I mean, she
it's the eye makeup that makes her look younger.
She doesn't look 17 in this movie.
Did you like how Kala was killed and how she dies?
She like turns into jelly. When,
oil. She turns into a black oil that melts into the grates.
Yeah.
And her network of operators doing their thing. Apparently, all you have to do is rip one of their glasses off.
One of their glasses
off. That was actually the most terrifying thing in the movie. When
that was shocking.
Took the guy's glasses off and you just see like the holes with the wires.
The holes with wires didn't look real. Awful. And again, as a 7-year-old, I thought that was amazing. So
this movie is definitely like if we ever did one of these shows about like the never ending story, you know, which came out when I was like,
oh, you'd be all about it.
5.
You're
gonna
say you'd love it. You could say it's
supposed what to are you guys
movie.
Doing next week?
Oh God.
No, I'm totally serious. I think we should do formative movies.
Die unendliche Geschichte. Yeah, I have that. I have that book in German. I have the never ending story in German.
Does it end the same way?
I never finished it.
Well, it has never ended. So
that's right.
Did you, Victorino?
Yes, JVL.
Did you ever see any of Ornella Muti's
no,
other
I've
work?
No, I haven't. Just photos. I haven't actually seen her other work.
Because that's
very Italian 70s look.
The one thing this lacked was an Ornella Muti nip slip.
Oh,
for
right.
You.
No, it, yeah, just, yeah.
Right. What 11-year-old Vic really needed.
It's pretty close.
It's just one little.
Pretty close with the like cat of nine tails scene.
Yeah, they have her splayed out there. That was, you know, but that was too much. That was too much. Okay, great. I'm glad we got. I know there was so much hype, and people are going to be so. People were so excited that we're going to talk about this movie.
I think it's you guys had a very good conversation. I just didn't care for it. I'm sorry. I like
Sonny. You're like me watching that awful Steven Soderbergh movie. No. You know, I only half joke about Widows because I was just not. I was like, ugh. I was like distracted at the time. In and of itself, I was just in a bad mood. But I'll tell you, the movie that I really did not like that we did for the show is that one Steven Soderbergh. He filmed it on his iPhone.
High flying bird.
Nothing ever happened in that movie. And just when you're, okay, finally, we're going to get to a basketball game, and they don't even show the basketball game. The whole thing, I felt like I was totally ripped off. What happened?
We all hated
it.
We all hated that, though. None of us.
No, I think Sonny liked
it. I thought it was fine. I enjoyed it.
Wait, Sonny liked High Flying Bird, but he didn't like Flash Gordon.
Yeah, one is good, and the other one is Flash Gordon.
Terrible. Terrible. Okay.
I don't know how to answer that.
I don't know how to answer that either. How are we doing on time since this is recorded on two segments?
I think we're fine.
Okay.
We're done here.
All right. Great.
Wait, by any chance, did anybody else see it?
No.
You know what, did you ask Dr. Mattis to give us a little text? No, hey Dad, no, what did you think of Flash Gordon?
I didn't. What was,
oh, you should have. That would have been great.
I forget. No. I haven't spoken to him. I just spoke to
text
my mother.
Text him right now.
Are you like, what? Are you watching now? No. You know what's funny? Speaking of that, of Gene, when I was rewatching Tootsie, they do a couple montages, and there's one montage with that corny Tootsie song, the theme to Tootsie, which is maybe Christopher Cross, I don't know, but it shows her becoming famous, like on the cover of People magazine. And in one of the things, they had photo shoots, and one of the things is her being interviewed by Gene Shalit. And it's like, you know, but they like, it's like chop. It shows like a couple of stills of them shaking hands and stuff like that. So, speaking of Gene, but no, there is none. I wonder what Gene's review was actually. I have to look back on that. Okay. Corrections, shout outs, anything?
Hey,
you guys.
Hey, I haven't been paying attention to the news. Is Val Kilmer still alive?
He's fine.
Hey.
You notice that I said he?
Hey.
He is fine.
This is like putting the ruby sunglasses on Scott Summers. We have found a way to harness Vic's powers for good.
And that Kim Jong-un, by the way, it doesn't look like him. I'm just telling you right now. I saw a picture.
Oh, you think it's a doppelganger?
I think it's a double, like Dave.
His double?
It's like Dave. So there was...
All of these autocrats do the doubles.
Yeah. No, Stalin. Absolutely.
You got to have a double.
Absolutely.
Saddam?
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Okay. There was something else, and it slipped my mind, so we'll have to move on. Did you have any... Oh, really quickly, did you have any... This is what I thought we were going to talk about before we went into Flash, was Tenet. Tenet, they say, is going to save the movie industry.
I mean, I feel like we talked about this a little bit last week.
I don't remember.
It's
coming out in theaters. It's going to be in theaters.
It's still, on the release schedule. We'll see. We'll see if theaters are open. I don't know.
All right.
It's the only thing that has kept me from just literally jumping off a building. Oof. So if that movie doesn't come out, you know,
that's it.
This show has been great, but you'll have to find a third.
Wow. Special thanks to longtime listener Robert Little, who sent me the Aviary Cocktail Book. This thing weighs about 50 pounds. So thank you. It serves two purposes. One is a cocktail book, and the other thing is I can now lift weights. I could just do bench pressing with the Aviary Cocktail Book. That's Grant Atkins's, right? I think it's Grant Atkins in Chicago. This is his crazy idea of a bar, which obviously there's no way this thing exists in the future. But anyway, thank you very much.
You know, I have to thank Robert Little as well, because he sent me some birthday butter powder.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go.
Thank you, Robert Little.
One of the person who runs the office and has been going in to get mail and stuff said I got a book about shoe shining. So I assume this also came from Robert.
Maybe
Little.
It is for Robert
I
Little.
I'll just assume.
When in doubt.
Thank you.
When in doubt, Robert Little. Also very cool. He sent me a note that was typed on a Groma Calibri, which is a DDR typewriter, the kind that is used in The Lives of Others. Das Leben der Anderen. Very, very interesting stuff. Very cool. Okay. Wow, that's all the time we're given to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at SundayBunch at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon at a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
I know.
He's shaking his head.
I know.
What, JVL?
I got two great presents for my birthday.
Oh, yeah.
The first...
We didn't even talk about your birthday.
The Happy first birthday. Was a video message from Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
That was pretty
good.
That
was very good.
So Cameo seems to be what Fire of the Fire Festival kind of thought it was going to be, which is the Uber of celebrity endorsements.
Yeah, but
not
that
even
was
endorsements,
for, like,
but messages,
appearances, and
right?
Stuff, right. Like,
and so what Cameo has figured out is no, the celebrities aren't going to go up here, but they will take, like, you know, $25 or $200 or $500 a pop to, like, send you a video message. And the Hacksaw Jim Duggan message I got was so great. That guy can still rock the mic. And the other thing I got was a new watch. Let me hold it up for you boys to see.
Whoa. Look at that.
Wow, a swatch.
Look at that.
It's just black on black. The hands.
Hamilton.
Yeah, because nobody could see it.
Khaki aviation X-copter. This is a pilot's watch for helicopter pilots. And basically now, if we got an evac from the homestead here in Woodbridge, Virginia, I'm ready to take the stick. If it's like, you know, last helicopter out of Saigon style, I got.
You know,
I got,
it's two different things. It's not like an airplane. Attack. It's two different. It's very
exactly style. Exactly. I've got the MTOW, the max takeoff weight calculator on this thing, the conversion scale for Fahrenheit to Celsius, in addition to the chronograph, so I can make sure the rotors aren't iced. I'm basically ready.
You'd be like Schwarzenegger in True Lies when he flies the Harrier.
That's basically what I would be.
It's amazing. How does the watch figure out the weight?
It's too complicated for me to bother explaining to you. All you'll do is make fun. It uses its RAM. It's because it's got a full gig of RAM. That's how it figures it out.
Is it like a slide rule? Do you turn dials until you get to like the right?
Yeah.
The right number.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Do you know there are watches with slide rules built into them?
That sounds about right.
The Breitling Navitimer, I think, has a slide rule built into it. Anyway,
well,
it's
that's
just
all the time we have
world.
For watch talk. I'm sure it's fine.
So, what do you guys got? Anything?
I got nothing. I got nothing. Didn't you say you had something for the end of the show? Was it this?
Yeah,
it was this. It was my watch.
Okay, good.
Okay.
All right, Vic.
I'm sure it's fine.
Hold on. Serious question. On how many occasions have you asked your wife to dress up as Princess Aura for you?
Well, she has the outfit. She doesn't even know what I'm talking about. She refused to watch the movie.
She's smart. She made a good choice.
Sure, it's fine.